On Sunday, January 13th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl will feature Miss Jane Cortez, writer, poet, performance artist, and co-founder of Yari Yari, an international conference on literature by women of African descent. That's Sunday, January 13th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the recording session. Have a seat.
And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. You know, I wanted to do something for the first time, and it's not here. Oh, there it is. Okay. Now I can do it. Stay tuned.
I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
That's right. This is Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones, and tonight, in honor of Jane Cortez, who transitioned on December 28th, 2012, we're going to air a program that, a conversation that we had had with Jane Cortez in 2010, I think it was. Stay tuned for more. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM. I want to send out best health wishes for Hank Williams, our executive or associate producer. He's mending, so hopefully he continues to mend well. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM.
I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar. My bowl.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the recording session. Have a seat. Have a cup of tea. Have a glass of water. We're about to start. Hope you enjoy the collaboration. Hope you become familiar with the sounds and the intenseness of expression. Just sit back and relax. This is about getting up in the morning and feeling good with a new day and a new chance to create. Okay? So may the deserts have water. May the storms calm down. May the snows lighten up. May the babies laugh. And may your ears remain open. So, in poetry, in music, in knowledge, in peace, security, and longevity, come on and step into the time flow with us. Come on. Let's go. Let's go. I sambered on the road to Jam Pessoa. I sambered on the beach of transparent crabs. I sambered to sounds of iron bells in the state of Bahia. I sambered while eating moqueca, while watching capoeira, while wearing no shoe belt made by maker of ritual objects in Salvador. I sambered through San Paulo Airport. Sambered into dark skin, light skin, African, Indian, Portuguese situations of struggle. I sambered into translations while drinking batidas with writers at fine ebony bookstore. I sombered while waiting for a short mustache so-called mulatto who swore he was a Yoruba Baba Bawa. You dig? I sombered onto a corner of handcuffed Afro-Brazilian men. I sombered next to women who were spinning, pulsating, and assaulting police cars. I sombered into House of Candomblé, into Congress of Black Culture, into Purville of African Literature. I sombered and samba. I sombered with Gigi and Egg Bus. I sombered into Transylvania, yeah. I sombered with Old Cove. I sombered in front of Daughters of Santos. I sombered against walls of political graffiti. I sombered with Shango. I sombered with Madu Samba. My samba wrapped in Orisha ribbons. My samba mixed with human spells and bitwana. My samba infused with Batapa and Gabarenias. The uphill samba bursting out of my feet. The samba whistles hollering out of my navel. The samba fetishes buzzing high in the samba dome of my soul as I sombered and sombered and sombered and sombered. Diagonally through Recife flood. Some but upward through steel cages of Brasilia. Some but away from alcohol fumes in Copacabana. Some but behind homeless children with soccer ball eyes. Some but past dealers dealing drugs. Some but into costume room in Comunidade Mangueira. Some but in front of a Protestant missionaries who preach that samba is sin. But samba is life. Samba is friction. Samba is power. Samba is samba. That's why I sombered and sombered and as he shook his heavy flesh in slow motion. Samba next to young women quivering their brown calves in quadruple time. My samba getting drunk off the high-speed rhythms. My samba embedded the bass drums of cachaça. My samba parading and scorching teeth of the Rio de Janeiro sun. My samba absorbing the forest stench of a poet from Amazonas. My samba squatting down and wiggling up. As I sombered the samba of my memory, the samba of my fantasy, the samba of my samba, because samba is life, samba is friction, samba is power, samba is everything. That's why I sombered and sombered and sombered and sombered and sombered.
Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm here with, what's your name, madam?
My name is Jane Cortez.
And Jane Cortez is visiting the studios of WBAI in Sugar in My Bowl. And thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me.
I hate to ask the general question of where you were born, but where were you born?
I was born in Fort Huachuca, Arizona.
Yeah, I saw that. That's pretty much why I asked you where you were born, because I couldn't pronounce it.
Uh-huh.
How was that? What was that like?
Well, it was fine. That really, Fort Huachuca was a military base for black soldiers. And I think I lived there for 6 or 7 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And then moved with my family to California. And so I really grew up in Los Angeles.
And life in Los Angeles?
And life in Los Angeles was sunny.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was full of a lot of growing pains. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun on some days. I was in in South Los Angeles are the area closest to Watts.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
What motivated your parents to move to California?
California?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I think they wanted to move. But also, my father was going to be stationed somewhere there in California.
Oh, okay.
And my grandparents had moved from Arizona to San Diego, so it was really good.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. What was the art scene like? I mean, you're only 6 years old, so what? And, you know, what is a six-year-old? Well, you were exposed to culture. So what was the culture that surrounded you?
Okay, first of all, we went to San Diego, then from San Diego to Los Angeles, so still at a very early age. So, I was looking at the grown-ups. I had some family that lived near Central Avenue and 42nd Street, so that was around the corner from a lot of the clubs at that time.
Okay.
So it was kind of like that one street at that time in the 40s was kind of like, being in New York City.
Oh, okay.
That it was crowded with a lot of people and a lot of activity going on in that one street, because on that one street within maybe 12 blocks you had at least 10 nightclubs, you know. So, and music was very important in the black community. And as a child growing up, you know, I was fortunate enough that my parents were record collectors, and I heard a lot of music, so I knew a lot of bands, and singers, you know.
So who did you hear? Who did you gravitate toward? Do you remember the names? Did parents?
Okay. Oh, yes. I liked very much Nat King Cole and Ella Fitzgerald and Duke Ellington and Billie Holiday. Mm-hmm. And then they played a lot of blues, so that was a lot in the home, you know.
Somewhere a woman is singing five different scales at the same time for every stingray bopping in the Savoy Ballroom. She is singing Savoy, Savoy. This energy's coming from me. Savoy, Savoy. I'm sinking my soul in you. Savoy, Savoy. Oh, how my spirit dilates, how my silence pulsates in between these spaces in you, Savoy, 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 Savoy. Somewhere a woman superimposing her supernatural nest of robins inside nature of singing Savoy instinctively takes possession of the moon, spins it forward from tune deck of incidental tunes, covers it with her scatology spittle, rolls it to the edge of her edge, and cuts up the space like the great space cutter she is, this woman singing Savoy, Savoy. And flying through porthole of her shipwreck, kicking in all the subversive signals she had suppressed in self-examination booth of ancestral tongues. This woman pushing back the romantic overgrown mangrove of you song books to step out with a Saturday night coup of riffs, everything lovely and sweet and lovely in her retrospective mouth of multiple time systems, mesmerizing and signifying to all the stingrays bopping in the Savoy ballroom. Savoy, 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 Savoy.
Savoy, the home of sweet romance. Savoy, it wins you at a glance. Savoy gives happy feet a chance to dance. Your form just like a clinging vine. Your lips so warm and sweet as wine. Your cheek so soft and close to mine, divine. How my heart is singing while the band is swinging. Never tired of romping and stomping with you at the Savoy. holiday. Savoy, where we can glide and sway. Savoy, there let me stomp away with you. Baba do be bit a bit, did it did it did it up all. Be did it know.
There's a whole, this thing about the blues. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was growing up, you know, the blues was just the blues. You know, but then, you know, when I got older, I understood that there was the blues that was from Memphis. Then there was the blues that was, you know, there was Delta blues.
Yeah.
There was Chicago blues.
Yeah.
There was apparently blues in California.
Well, yes, a lot of the people from Texas, and Oklahoma, and Louisiana all came to California.
Oh, okay.
People from Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, they had a tendency to go towards Chicago.
Okay. So who were the blues folks around you?
Well, Big Mama Thornton,
for
instance. When I was a teenager, she was singing in the Johnny Otis Band, which is a band that played for teenage dances.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was there in the same band was little Esther Phillips.
Oh, wow.
So they were two of the people. But then there were later a lot of small blues clubs. So I did have a chance to hear Lightning Hopkins.
Wow.
I heard John Lee Hooker, of course. Mm. I heard Muddy Waters. And I guess, you know, many other blues singers.
I'm taking the blue ooze back home. I'm taking the blue ooze back home. I'm taking the blue ooze back home. I'm taking the blue back home. I'm taking the blue back to where the blue stills won't go. I'm taking the blue back home. I'm taking the blue back home. Taking the blues back home, because the blues feelers like to steal when they think they have nothing of their own. When they think they have nothing of their own, I'm taking the blues back home. I'm taking the blues back home. I'm taking the blues back to the fire of the spirit. I'm taking the blues back to the damp undergrowth. I'm taking the blues back to where the blues stealers won't go. I'm taking the blues back home. I'm taking the blues back home. I'm taking the blues back home. I'm taking the blues out of the mouth of the stealer. I'm taking the blues out of the western spring. I'm taking the blues back home. I'm taking the blues back home. I'm taking the blues back home before somebody sings. Ain't nobody's business if I steal your blues. I'm taking the blues back home. I'm taking the blues back home. I'm taking, I'm taking the blues back home.
I'm taking, I'm taking, I'm taking. be coming high, showing the high. When you see me passing, baby, break down and cry. Cause they call me Big Mama, weigh 300 pounds. I get rocking, I get rolling, I get really gonna die. We'd like to sing this song for you. I wrote this song, ladies and gentlemen, in 1960. And the late and great Janis Joplin, she asked me, could she do it? So I told her yes. But I had the pleasure of putting it on the record before she did. So here it is, in my own way, the way I wrote it. Now, she might have did some changes, I don't know. Now, see, I can't sing like nobody but me. I might do your song, but no way in the world I can do you. All right, fellow, D minor, slow and easy. Take it, love, B.B. King style. And this also dedicated to my baby sister. She's out there in the audience somewhere. And her friend. And also Doo-Doo and all the little doo-doos. I see them running around here. Sitting behind my window. Sitting there looking out at the rain. Oh, looking out at the rain. Something struck me. Clammed on like a ball and chain. Oh, Lord. Gonna miss all of those those sweet things. Oh, I know you're gonna miss me, baby. I know you're gonna miss all of those sweet things. You found out your heart to beat like mine. Whoa, wrapped up like a ball and chain. Why do everything have to happen to poor me? Why do everything have to happen to poor me? I want you to turn needle.
So your house was filled with records?
Yeah. At that time, there were 78 in albums, and you just go through and, you know, play one at a time. And that's why you had a chance to really know the different tunes. Like, you could really sing along because it was going to play over and over and over and over. So you knew it.
So did you go to the shop to pick up 78 yourself?
Or? Yeah, I did. And then later the 33s and, you know, so on. So I just kept going and collected a lot of music.
Because actually when I was younger, people purchased more 45s than 33s, because people purchase singles.
Right. But then, you know, I became really a very, very big jazz fan. And that wasn't on 45.
Right.
So, you know, you were 33. So.
Right. Yeah, the R&B and pop and what have you was on 45.
That's right.
So I understood that Lena Horne was an acting inspiration for you. Is that true?
Yeah, only because, well, that was at that time she was in film. Mm-hmm. And we all saw Cabin in the Sky and Stormy Weather and, you know, saw her and we thought she was wonderful. We also thought that Ethel Waters was great, especially, you know, in Cabin in the Sky.
Right.
Yeah. And in that sense, you know, she inspired a lot of young girls.
Mm-hmm. I heard acting in particular because you were in theater.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Well, yeah. a little bit. I did. I attended acting classes at the Ebony Showcase in Los Angeles. And I had a wonderful a workshop instructor by the name of Davis Roberts. And I met a lot of young actors at the time, and I enjoyed my time in those workshops. Not only that workshop, but there were other workshops that I attended throughout Los Angeles. And I was very much interested in acting and directing. But then, you know, it was at a time that a lot of stuff was starting to happen in the South. And so I went to Mississippi, and when I went to Mississippi and I was really involved in the civil rights movement, then that's when I understood that there really were hardly any plays by black playwrights that I would be performing in. And so, therefore, what I did after my involvement in the South is that I came back to Los Angeles and with friends who were interested in starting kind of another kind of a workshop in the black community. And I mentioned that maybe we should do this in Watts. And so I started the Watts Repertory Theater Company.
Wow. You know. So how was that?
That was good because we did a lot of our own plays that we wrote, and we did a lot of improvisational work. You know, so it was good.
How did being in the theater help with your writing?
Well, I don't know if it helped me with my writing, because I was always writing poetry, because I started keeping notebooks at a young age, and now I have the same notebooks, as you will notice. I'm never without a notebook.
Uh-huh.
And where I keep a lot of notes and a lot of things I want to remember. And I think the notes helped me more than any of the acting, or that might have helped me in performance more, you know, stage presence and all of that kind of stuff.
Let's go back to Mississippi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I understood you worked in a factory.
Not in Mississippi.
Oh, okay. Well,
no,
I worked in factories
okay. in Los Angeles in the garment industry.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, but in Mississippi, I went there to work with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in the voter registration project, and my task was to survey what was going on in Mississippi with the various workers, and to meet some of the leaders, and then come back to Los Angeles, set up a Friends of SNCC support group, and raise funds for the project.
Did you often put on performances to raise funds?
I did put on maybe two or three performances, and that's when I did my first one-woman show with poetry and music.
What was that called?
Well, it was called many things at different times.
Oh, okay.
You know, but, you know, it gave me a chance to really experiment and read a lot of poetry and work with some really fine musicians.
So, who'd you work with?
I worked with, with Horace Tapscott for one.
Uh-huh.
Piano, one time.
Right?
Piano player, brilliant piano player, and his group. And I worked with the tenor saxophonist, Teddy Edwards, and then other musicians at the time. And those performances were like, I think 1964. We did a lot of rehearsing and stuff like that in 63, but the concerts were actually in 1964, 1965, 66, and then I came to New York City in 1967.
Welcome to New York City. Wow, what was that all about? How was that for you?
Coming to New York City?
Bright,
well, you know,
city.
I always wanted to come to New York City. I imagined myself here, you know, because I was a jazz fan, and I loved the music of Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie and a lot of different people who were playing bebop in the late 40s and early 50s, and then later with more avant-garde jazz, as it's called.
Free jazz.
Free jazz, or just black music.
Yeah.
Yeah, so being in New York gave me a chance to work with a lot of different musicians, reading my poetry, and I love living in New York. I still do.
So I take it that's around the time you met
No. Actually met Ornette in about the end of 1950 and 51 at a jam session in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because he was on the West Coast.
That moment he was traveling with a blues band, and they disbanded in Los Angeles and stranded the musicians.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I've heard about that happening.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar My Bowl is the name of this show. We're listening to Jane in the background, J-A-Y-N-E, by Ornette Coleman from Something Else. We're also listening to Ornette Coleman playing in the background. The music of Ornette Coleman, Contemporary Records, 1958 release. Ornette Coleman, alto sax. Don Cherry, trumpet. Walter Norris on piano, Don Payne on bass, and Billy Higgins on drums. Before that, we heard Ball and Chain, Big Mama Thornton. I got that from Sassy Mama. It's just a Memory Records release, 2005. Before that, we heard They Call Me Big Mama, and that was from a compilation, a box set, as a matter of fact, Big Mama Thornton. Hound Dog, the Peacock Recordings, 1992 release. Before that, we heard Taking the Blues Back Home, Jane Cortez and the Fire Spitters, Taking the Blues Back Home, Verve Records. Before that, we heard, Jane Cortez voice, Donardo Coleman drums, Talib Kibwe, or TK Blue, on alto sax, Al McDowell on bass, Burn Nix, and Carl Weatherby on guitar, and Frank Lowe on tenor sax. Before that, we heard Stompin' at the Savoy, Ella Fitzgerald, of course, and Louis Armstrong from The Wonderful World of Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong. Before that, we heard Samba is Power, Jane Cortez and the Fire Spitters from Cheerful and Optimistic on Bola Press. Jane Cortez voice, Donardo Coleman drums, TK Blue, Talib Kibwe on alto sax, Al McDowell on bass, Burn Nix on guitar, Ipizu Bangura on djembe, and Selu Suso on kora, and Sarjo Akuyate on kora as well. Before that, we opened the show, we didn't open it. Well, we opened the show with Jane singing, presenting Hello Everybody, Jane Cortez and the Fire Spitters, Cheerful and Optimistic on Bola Press. Jane Cortez voice, Donardo Coleman drums, Talib Kibwe alto sax, Al McDowell on bass, and Burn Nix on guitar. And we open the show with our theme, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, Nina Simone. And I really didn't want to talk this long, but I really, I have to announce that there's going to be a webcast for the NEA, National Endowment of the Arts, Jazz Masters Award Ceremony. Tomorrow at 7:30, you can go to the web. There's a live webcast and stuff at, arts.gov/jazzmasterswebcast. That's JAZZMASTERS webcast. And there's also going to be the same webcast at JALC, jazzatlincolncenter.org. JALC.org/NEA Jazz Masters. And our former guest, Lou Donaldson, he's going to be a jazz master. He's going to be crowned, awarded jazz master. Eddie Palmieri is another jazz master who will be will be a recipient. And who else? Oh, yeah, Mose Allison and Lorraine Gordon will also receive the honors. And I also would like to make an announcement for Warren Smith, January 20th at 2 p.m. until 9 p.m. at the Brecht Forum. Drums for Warren. It's a benefit concert for Warren Smith. Let's help Warren rebuild his priceless percussion collection that was lost during Hurricane Sandy. And it's Warren Smith's Composer Workshop Ensemble. There's Jason Cao Hang, Roy Campbell, Ross Moshe, Henry Grimes, Newman Taylor Baker, everybody. Andrew Drury, another Sugar My Bowl former guest, Dick Griffin, and many, many more. And you can find out more by going to, what is this? www.dissidentarts.com. www.dissidentarts.com. And it was organized and will be hosted by John Pietaro and Ross Moshe. Stay tuned for more. Jane Cortez. We miss her so. It's Sugar My Bowl. This is WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
So you performed together as well, didn't you? Rarely?
We didn't. He performed on one of my recordings in New York City. But we did some things together just, you know, not for the public.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Talking about things, experimenting.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, like that.
Oh, okay. Like, yeah, I guess one would say DiNardo was something you didn't
do. Oh. Well, listen, I was married to him in 1954, you know.
Wow.
For 10 years, so, you know, we had a lot of very good conversations about music and stuff.
And then you met Mel.
And then I met Mel. Melvin Edwards.
Yes.
Yeah, my second husband.
Yes.
Who is a sculptor.
Yes.
And that was nice because in high school, well, in junior high school, I was really a music student, but I was a music art student in high school and thought I would be a visual artist.
Mm-hmm.
And so hanging out with Mel gave me a chance to really go to a lot more gallery shows, a lot more museums, really had someone to talk to about the various images and, you know, and a lot of the visual art activities.
And he works in steel.
Yes, he does. He makes small steel, small pieces and large monumental works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, during the Slave Roots conference at NYU.
2008.
I was introduced to his work then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing pieces. They're all over the place. They're all over this continental United States.
Yeah, it seems that way now.
Yeah. Is he still sculpting?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I mean, he will never give that up. Mm. It might give him up, but he'll never give it up.
He's still sculpting in steel.
Oh, well, he still works in steel,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
You had written a piece. I guess it was more from what I read. It was about Ogun, but it was for Mel.
Yeah. I called it Ogun's Friend. Yeah.
Your eyes like bumps of flint. I saw your shoes like high-top boulders. I saw your hands like faces of fire. I saw your fingers like axes of Shango. I saw your body like a rocker of steel. Yo! I heard a hum down there. I heard a rumble down there. I heard a ghost down there. I heard a thunderbolt expel down there. I heard an amble in the night go, down there. Hey, whose meadows are shouting so loud? They must be the tapper that Ogun knows. Whose are those beads so hot and black? They must be brass for Ogun to fill. Who's that worker with corrugated gums? It must be the worker that Ogun chose. Who's that one with feet like flames? It must be the welder that's Ogun's friend. Yo! I smell a chicken in here. I smell some charcoal in here. I smell a goat in here. I smell some wax in here. I smell a dog in here. I smell some clay and some oil and some blood in here. Hey, I see your chains like links of teeth, crowbars. I see your coils like female pouches, barbed wire. I see your grills like braided snakes, fishnets. your ladder like a totem of pliers. Crocodiles. I see your pipes like razors on tusk. Wine bottles. I see your scissors and your keys on the table in there. Uh-huh. Yo, you got pad legs made into hats. You got diamond plates made into walls. You got straightening combs made into steps. You got hammerheads made into skulls. You got flat rings made into ears. Flat rings, hammerheads, straightening combs, diamond plates, pad legs, yo. I feel your flux. I feel your sander. I feel your drill bit. I feel your grinder. I feel your drill press. I feel your hacksaw. I feel your brick axe. I saw your windows like sheets of steel. I heard a gong down there. I saw some navels like bushes of wire. I heard a bird down there. Hey, you got lizard tongues made into tongs. I feel your balls spot. You got snake skins covered in bronze. I feel your chin marks. Lizard tongues, ball spots, snake skins, chin marks, yo. I smell some fish in here. I see a wheel down there. I smell some toes in here. I see a horn down there. I smell some funk in here. I see a knife down there. I smell some rats in here. I see a person down there. Who's that one so brown and fine? Ogun's friend. Who's that one in green on green? Ogun's friend. Who's that one who eats so fast? Ogun's friend. Who's that one with toothpaste lips? Ogun's friend. Who's that one who spits on tools? Ogun's friend. Ogun's friend, Ogun's friend, Ogun's friend, Ogun's friend, Ogun's friend, Ogun's friend, Ogun's friend.
Help WBAI rebuild. WBAI lost a great deal of revenue as a result of being evacuated from 120 Wall Street. Our steady stream of BAI Buddy monthly subscriptions had built terrific momentum at its launch, and we need to rebuild that interrupted momentum again. Fill out the secure online form on our website at WBAI.org to donate $10 or more each month directly from your checking account or credit card, and you will get a WBAI tote bag, the member perks card for discounts around the city. You'll be able to donate in the name of OutFM. You'll be able to cut down on-air fund drive days. And this will support WBAI for as little as $10 a month. That's 33 cents a day.
Hi, this is Christian McBride, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
And that came from really spending some years in and out of Nigeria and becoming aware of a lot of the African deities, the Yoruba deities, and knowing that Ogun was the god of iron, of war, and so all of the metal workers and the blacksmiths were a part of, you know, the Ogun, in the Ogun tradition.
Right. You know, there's that piece, we want the oil, but we don't want the people. Did that come from your spending time in Nigeria?
Yeah, because I the piece was, it's not they would call They Want the Oil. That's not the title. The title was Nigerian-American Relations. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that one line just says it. You know.
They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people.
They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They want the oil, but they don't want the people. They don't want the people. They don't want the people. They don't want the people.
And of course, that can be used in the Middle East and in other places as well. Basically, somebody wants your resources. They don't want you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's like we got here on a slave ship. They wanted our labor, free labor, but they don't really want you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've often replaced oil for many things.
Many resources.
Tell me about Claude Rees Jr. Who was Claude Rees Jr.?
Claude Rees Jr. was a young boy, 14 years old, in Brooklyn, and he was shot in the head by the police who came into his house. You know, I think there was some, I can't remember, there was some event going on in his house, maybe a little get-together or something, but, you know, and they shot him, and that's who Claude Rees was. And I responded to that incident in the piece that I guess you have. It or you
no,
don't
I don't
have
actually.
It.
No, actually, I think I have a piece of a piece.
There is it. But this happened in the 1970s. It was called "Give Me the Red on the Black of the Bullet." Bring back the life of Claude Rees Jr. I want the bullet from his head to make a Benin bronze, to make an explosion of thunder, to make a cyclone. I want the 14 years of Claude Rees Jr. shot on the 15th day of September, shot in the back of his head, shot by a police officer in Brooklyn, shot for being black. Give me the black on the red of the bullet. I want to make a tornado, to make an earthquake, to make a fleet of stilts for the blackness of Claude Rees Jr. The blackness called dangerous weapon, called resisting an arrest, called nigger threat. I want the life of the blackness of Claude Rees Jr. I want the bullet from his head to make a protective staff for startled children, to make hooks and studs for warrior mask. Give me the bullet with the odor and the smoke and the skin and the hair of Claude Rees Jr. I want to make power. I want to make power for the blackness of Claude Rees Jr. The blackness called pent-up frustration, called unidentified Negro, called revolutionary. I want the life of the blackness of Claude Rees Jr. I want the bullet from his head to make a protective staff for startled children, to make a Benin bronze, to make an explosion of thunder, to make a cyclone. I want the bullet to bring back the blood of Claude Rees Jr. I want to make justice. I want to make justice for the blackness of Claude Rees Jr. Bring back the bullet with the blood of the blackness of Claude Rees Jr. I want to make justice. I want to make justice for the blackness of Claude Rees Jr.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for reading that. So that's not the only piece that you'd written with regard to police brutality.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Police brutality is, you know, a problem within all of the black communities, and it's unavoidable. And so it's something that you want to write about.
Liberty, justice, equality? Maybe in the 21st century. Maybe on another planet. Maybe in outer space. Maybe, 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 maybe.
How was it for you raising a son?
How do you mean, how was it for me raising a son?
Well, since we were talking about police and
you know,
how they behave.
Raising Donardo was easy because he was such a sweet child and such a helpful, independent young boy that it was just delightful. It was wonderful. I discovered a lot of, you know, things about myself as a mother, and to still kind of be hanging out with my son at this age is great.
Yeah, because he drums in your ensemble.
Yeah, he works in his father's band, and he works in my band as
Fire
well.
Fire
Spitters. Yeah. In fact, we organized the Fire Spitter Band together.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
You go mediate. You go to the cemetery of drums. Return and tell.
through the cup of his cleft. Did you hear Intinga sanding on the rim of his rest? Did you hear Sepia pour while stuttering like a goat-sucking hawk? Did you hear Bata crying in a Nago tongue? Did you hear Pawtown Rom speaking through the skull of a dog? Did you hear it? Did you hear it? Did you hear it? Did you hear it? Oh, yay! I say, I see, Chano Pulso! Of skin, a very fine sack of the lips, a very fine pulse, a very fine and quick throw, very fine, very fine, very fine. Is there anyone finer than Chano Pozo from Havana, Cuba? Oh, yay!
For the most part, it seems as though there are interchangeable members of the Fire Spitters, mm-hmm. But there seem to be consistents like DiNardo.
And Al McDowell, okay. And Vern Nix.
Okay.
So the rhythm section was, and so they're there most of the time, all of the time.
Vern Nix is?
The guitar player, okay. And Al McDowell is a bass player.
Okay.
And then we have various, depending on the gig, the appearance and the money. I like to perform with a lot of different musicians, and we have had as many as 10 people in the band.
Wow.
And then 3.
Yeah.
You know, and we work with, TK Blue sometimes on alto saxophone, and the late Sam Furness on alto saxophone worked with us, and Alex Harding, of course, our wonderful baritone player.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, he is. He's a wonderful person, too. And Charles Moffett Jr. used to play tenor saxophone with us. And just it has been different horn players. And it's at one point we had kora players and other percussionists. Mm. You know? Yeah.
Oh, back to the horn, Lakeisha Benjamin.
And Lakeisha Benjamin played with us. And also Montana
Roberts.
Yeah, played with us. Uh-huh. And Amatana. That's how she pronounces her name, Montana Roberts. And who else worked with us? Bill Cole played Indian Shanai and Chinese Sona.
I saw him at the Brecht. Actually, I saw him at the Vision Festival, too.
Okay, yeah.
With Warren Smith.
Okay, yeah.
On drums.
Yeah. And Warren Smith has... I've worked with Warren. I've worked with Bill and Warren and Joe Daly. You know, that group.
Right, right.
And I worked with many other different groups. Uh-huh. But the Fire Spitter group is special.
Yeah. How did you and DiNardo decide that you wanted to do Fire Spitters?
You know, because I had worked with all of the other groups before and never really had the chance to experiment and really, well, everything's an experiment, I guess, but I wanted to have more time to really work out words with music. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure that the poetry was the guide line or the center post where everything came from or has to, in other words, the musicians are responding to the poetry, to the words, to the feeling in the words.
Right.
And they are using that as their point of departure in the improvisations. And I wanted it to be that way and sort of not the other way around.
Okay.
And in order to do that, see, you have to have your own group.
Right, right, right. That's true. Sit in on somebody else's group.
Yeah, you know. No, it's just the way they want it to go.
Right. You want to read something else?
Okay. This is called Find Your Own Voice. Find your own voice and use it. Use your own voice and find it. The sounds of drizzle on dry leaves are not like sounds of insults between pedestrians. The women laughing in the window do not sound like air conditioners on the blink. The river turtle does not breathe like a slithering boa constrictor. The roar of a bull is not like the cackle of a hyena. The growl of a sea leopard is not like the teething cry of a baby. The slash of a barracuda is not like the gulp of a leaping whale. The speech of a tiger shark is not like the bark of an eagle fish. The scent of a gardenia is not like the scent of a tangerine. Find your own voice and use it. Use your own voice and find it.
Find your own voice and use it. Use your own voice and find it. Find your own voice.
The sounds of drizzle on dry leaves are not like the sounds of insults between pedestrians. Those women laughing in the window do not sound like air conditioners on the brink. The river turtle does not breathe like a slithering boa constrictor. The roar of a bull is not like the cackle of a hyena. Find your own voice. Your own voice and find it. Find your own voice and use it. Use your own voice and find it.
Of an eagle fish. The scent of a gardenia is not like the scent of a tangerine. Find your own voice and use it. Use your own voice and find it. Find your own voice and use it. Use your own voice and find it.
And on the subject of your voice, do you think your voice has grown into your words?
Does
it fit?
Yeah, it fits. It's all one thing. You know, it's what you have, how you want to say words, and your interest in languages. You're interested, you know, if you're interested in playing with words. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't matter what your voice sounds. I mean, it's going to sound like your voice.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you are doing, and, you know, the words that I'm putting down there in, you know, one word following the other word, and because I'm interested in sound, I'm interested in the sound of words. Mm-hmm. And the sound also helps to make the image, and from the image then comes the rhythms or the improvisations and everything else, and so it's all because of the sound of, you know, of the word.
Mm-hmm. Were you involved in, like, on apparently in on the East Coast in New York there was the Black Arts Movement.
Mm-hmm.
Were you in a movement?
Well, it wasn't a movement at that moment, but yes, I was involved with people. Okay, if you want to call it the Black Arts Movement, yes. Mm-hmm. You could also say that the Black Arts Movement was happening, you know, in many more places. Mm-hmm. In Los Angeles, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, there was a movement of black artists interested in the same thing that the people on the East Coast were interested in. Mm-hmm. And the Black Arts Movement really followed the tradition, I would say the more revolutionary tradition of resistance and of promoting or caring about freedom that happened on the shores of Africa. Mm-hmm. With the beginning of the freedom movement, mm-hmm. the Black Freedom Movement. So I think literary artists, musicians, and visual artists all responded to things that were happening within the black community in the 60s, and that the Black Arts Movement was a part of the civil rights black power movement, and it was very important and still important. Mm-hmm. It didn't get the kind of media play or the airplay that, say, people in the rap generation that they get for what they do, which is a watered-down version of what was happening within the Black Arts Movement.
What would you say to yourself if you had to lay on your back, hold up the horn, and play 99 courses of a tune called Flying Home exactly as you recorded it 55 years ago? What would you think to yourself if you woke up in the afternoon and your head was still spinning with voices shouting, "Flying home, go flying home"? And what would you do if someone whispered in your ear, "Hug me, kiss me, but please don't play Flying Home"? And what if a customer said, "Tonight I'm having sex with a person who has been up in a flying saucer, so please me down good with Flying Home"? Areas in the world just to perform your infectious version of Flying Home? And what if you saw yourself looking like a madman with a smashed horn walking backward on a circle?
subway platform after 50 years of blowing flying home. And what would you think to yourself if you had to play flying home when you didn't have no home to fly to? And what if flying home became your boogie-woogie social security check? Your oldie but goodie way out of retirement, and what's more valuable than you? I mean, somewhere in advance of nowhere, you're in here after being out there, pretending to be in here, knowing that you're out there, saying that you're in here, dreaming of being out there, acting like you're in here, living like you're out there, celebrating that you're in here, afraid of being out there, feeling like you're in here, shouting like you're out there, laughing like you're in here, running like you're out there, smelling like you're in here, wondering if you're out there, thinking that you're in here, talking like you're out there, in here, out there, flying up, flying out, flying home.
The continent of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned that you have you've been going back to Nigeria back and forth. Are there other parts of the continent that you visit regularly?
Yeah, sure. I visited in 1967 was my first visit to Africa. I went to Ghana, I went to Ethiopia, Sudan, and Nigeria. And then in the 70s, in 1970, 71, 73, I went to Ghana, but in Togo, through Dahomey into Nigeria, and really stayed in Nigeria, spent summers living in Nigeria, mainly in Ibadan or Benin City.
How did you wind up going to the continent initially?
I wanted to go there because I wanted to go there.
Okay.
But it was very good to have been in Mississippi in 1963 and 64 because it was a really nice connection from there to Ghana and to Nigeria.
So
I always wanted to go to Africa. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I had the chance to go and had a ticket. Yes, in the 1970s, it was there were some charter flights that you could go for $350 round trip and
wow.
blah blah blah. So
yeah.
Listen,
wow.
you know, go now and pay later. The main thing was just get there, see
yeah.
what's happening. So DiNardo and I went in 67, and we were the first ones in our family to touch down in Africa. You know, after 400 years.
Wow.
So I felt that was very special, you know. Mm-hmm. And traveling is very good. It's very good to be able to see or meet people from other cultures.
Yes.
In definitely. Their homeland.
Yes.
And to hear a lot of other languages and just see how people do what they do and mm-hmm. communicate. And you can do that while traveling, and you really, really learn a lot.
There's one more thing I do want to ask you about, because I sort of thought of it as you were talking. Teaching.
Mm-hmm.
How long did you do that, and how did you wind up in the institutions that you wound up in?
Well, I did it off and on for many years. You know, like I was teaching in the workshop settings in Los Angeles, giving a lot of lectures all around the United States in various universities and colleges. And then I was teaching once I taught the history of jazz in the College of New Rochelle. I taught, black music, black literature, and, poetry at, Rutgers University in New Brunswick mm-hmm. for a few years. And, then I was artist in residence in a few places, and I've mm-hmm. Been teaching, I guess, for a long time.
How did that happen? How people just came to you and like, come to our institution?
Yeah. Yeah, I could tell you, yeah, that's how it happened, exactly.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, are you interested in da-da-da-da-da?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I'm interested. Well, come, I'm going to set up an interview for you and da-da-da-da-da. And it happened like that, yeah. But, you know, it helps when you're a poet or you're a writer or in any of the arts that you have a lot of different kind of jobs, so that you have contact with many, many different people. And so I wasn't just teaching all the time. I was doing a lot of other things.
How did you wind up putting together Yari Yari?
Well, first let's say, let's start with the Organization of Women Writers of Africa. I am one of the co-founders with Ama Ata Edu of Ghana, a wonderful writer. Together, we decided to form this organization. And we had our board, our first, well, our only board, really. Our executive committee consists of Louise Merriweather, J.E. Franklin, Rashida Ismaili, Cheryl Green and Renee Laria, and now we are bringing in younger people like Rosemond King and other young women to then take over from us. But Ama and I felt that we needed an organization. We noticed that going to various conferences that we would see each other, and we didn't know anything about each other's writings, each other's cultures, nothing. So we felt like we needed an organization to bring all that together and to address some problems of censorship, some problems of publishing and distribution and all of that, and that we could better do it if we had an organization. So within the organization, we decided one way to bring a lot of writers together, not just us, that we could have a conference on women's writing, the writing of women from around the world. So we started Yari Yari, Black Women Writers in the Future, was the first conference that took place in 1997 at New York University with the co-sponsorship of the Institute of African American Affairs of NYU. And that conference included about 150 women writers from all over Africa, Europe, Canada, and the United States. And it was really a powerful conference. The second conference was called, and Yari Yari, of course, is means the future of the future, in one of the languages of Sierra Leone. And the second Yari Yari conference was held in 2004, and it was called Yari Yari, Black Women Writers Dissecting Globalization. And it was also co-sponsored by the Institute of African American Affairs at NYU, and mainly everything was held at NYU and the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture. So in that conference, we brought the same amount of women, you know, and we were able to, you know, really dissect globalization in an interesting way. And what's wonderful, the both conferences are, well, portions of both conferences can be found on film, and those films are distributed by Third World Newsreel.
All right. I was just going to ask you about that, because I heard about the film. You were given a director's credit on those films.
I was the director on both films. We're in discussions about our next Yari Yari, and we only do the Yari Yari conferences when we think it's really needed, so that you notice it doesn't come every year, every 2 years. You don't know when it's going to come.
That's true.
But we feel like we are going to have another Yari Yari conference, and it's going to take place in Accra, Ghana in January of 2013.
How did you decide on that date?
Well, I had a nice meeting with Ama Ata Edu in December, and we decided, yeah, it was time to do the Yari Yari in Africa. And we had wanted to do one in Africa, so now is the time.
If the drum is a woman, why are you pounding your drum into an insane babble? Why are you pistol whipping your drum at dawn? Why are you shooting through the head of your drum and making a drum tragedy of drums? drum is a woman. And don't abuse your drum. Don't abuse your drum. Don't abuse your drum. I know the night is full of displaced persons, yes. I see skin striped with flames, yes. I know the ugly dispositions of underpaid clerks. They constantly menstruate through the eyes, yes. I know bitterness embedded in flesh, yes. The itching alone can drive you crazy, uh-huh. Hey, I know that this is America, and the chickens are coming home to roost on the MX missile, yes. But if the drum is a woman, why are you choking your drum? Why? Why are you raping your drum? Why? Why are you saying disrespectful things to your mother drum, your sister drum, your wife drum, and your infant daughter drum? Why? I mean, if the drum is a woman, then understand your drum. Understand your drum. Your drum is not docile. Your drum is not invisible, no. Your drum is not inferior to you, no way. Your drum is a woman. Your drum is a woman. So don't reject your drum. Don't try to dominate your drum. Don't become weak and cold and desert your drum. Don't be forced into a position as an oppressor of drums and make a drum tragedy of drums if the drum is a woman. Abuse your drum, don't abuse your drum, don't abuse your drum, don't abuse your drum.
What are you up to? Are you going to be doing anything in the city or this country? Speaking of being
well,
here.
I'm working, on another CD.
Okay.
And it's based on some live performances at the Vision Festival and at a couple of universities. So, okay. You know, but just wanting to put out some of the live performances that we did. So I'm working on that.
Excellent.
As well as probably always another book. I'm always working on something, and I have a lot of readings. And no performances that I know of right here in the city, you know, doing a bunch of things,
right.
As well as hanging out with friends. And I just came back to cold, chilly, freezing New York,
yes.
In January, and I was in Senegal for the Black Arts Festival of Black Arts there in December. Mm. And, you know, I'll be going back to Senegal in May. So it's still, you know, a lot of traveling involved, a lot of performing still, and just a lot of seeing and thinking about things.
Well, thank you very much, Jane Cortez. Thank you for visiting WBAI and Sugar My Bowl.
Okay, and thank you so much for inviting me.
That was my conversation with Jane Cortez. And this program originally aired in March of 2011. It was March 20th, 2011. That was actually the second time that Jane Cortez was back here since Pepsi Charles was on the air. That was quite some time ago. And I'd like to thank Latasha and Nevada Diggs for helping to make it happen. And, yeah, I'm glad I met her. And the last time I saw her was this past October during the Art in Black Los Angeles exhibit at MoMA, PS1, in Long Island City. And I am grateful for that opportunity. What we're listening to now is what is this song again? Oh, God. You know, I had actually planned on playing something else, but I kept calling it something else, too. Why can't I think now? I'm drawing a blank. I know the melody. You know the song. Well, they're calling it, it's Caravan. That's what it is. My goodness. Okay, so, Caravan from Dizzy Gillespie, Jazz. Quincy Jones is on this one. God, there's so many people on here. And I can't read them all now because I gotta go. Mongol Santa Maria is on this track, isn't he? Is he on this one? No, he's not on this one. Oh, goodness. Just pick yourself up, Afro, by Dizzy Gillespie on the Verve label. And, let's see, before that we heard The Drum is a Woman, and that's from There It Is, Bola Press, 1982, Jane Cortez voice. Abraham Adzadine, Adzinya on Conga. Bill Cole on Chennai, Flute, Musette, Korean Sona, Donardo Coleman on drums, Farrell Johnson Jr. on bongo, bell and conga, Charles Moffat Jr. on tenor saxophone, Bern Nix on guitar, Jamaluddin Takuma on electric bass. Before that, we heard About Flying Home, Jane Cortez and the Fire Spitters, Borders of Disorderly Time. That's where that was from. Bola Press, 2003. Jane Cortez, a voice. Donardo Coleman, drums. Frank Lowe on tenor sax, Al McDowell on bass, Bern Nix on guitar, Sam Furness, alto sax, Alex Harding, baritone sax, James Blood Omer on guitar as well. Find Your Own Voice before that, Jane Cortez and the Fire Spitters. Cheerful and Optimistic, Bola Press, 1994 release. Jane Cortez voice, Donardo Coleman drums, Frank Lowe, tenor sax, Al McDowell, bass, Bern Nix, guitar, James Carter, whom I saw last night as I was leaving La Poisson Rouge as part of the Winter Jazz Festival, on baritone sax. Before that, we heard I See, Gian Opozzo, Jane Cortez, and the Fire Spitters from There It Is. I read that lineup before when I read The Drum is a Woman. And before that, we heard Maybe, Jane Cortez and the Fire Spitters. It is from a compilation on Bola Press 2006 release, Find Your Own Voice, but it was before that it was released on Everywhere Drums, which is not one that one can find on CD, but that was originally released in 1990. Jane Cortez voice, Edward Blackwell drums, Frank Lowe tenor sax, Bern Nix guitar, Charles Moffat Jr., tenor sax, Al McDowell, bass, Donardo Coleman, drums, Bill Cole, Korean Hojok, Abraham K. Adzinya on percussion. And before that, we heard U.S.-Nigerian Relations. That was also from There It Is, Bola Press, 1982. And before that, we heard Ogun's Friend. Jane Cortez from Unsubmissive Blues, Bola Press, 1979. Jane Cortez, vocals, Donardo Coleman drums, Joe Daly, tuba, Bern Nix guitar, and that release was produced by Jane Cortez as well. And I mentioned earlier of... Actually, you know, after this, we're going to play something from Jane Cortez's final release, As If You Knew. It was a compilation of live and concert recordings. It says Jane Cortez and the Fire Spitter Band, live in concert. And there were two performances. One was at the Vision. Well, actually, three performances. Two were at the Vision Festival, 2007 and 2010. And one was from Syracuse University, released in 2009. And thank you, Jane Cortez, for having sent it to me. Thank you. Thank you for everything, lady. Your physical presence will be missed, but your spirit will live forever. Period. And coming up next will be La Nueva Alternativa here on WBAI New York 99.5 FM. And as I said, you're going to listen to Jane. I have a couple of more announcements. I'm going to announce again something, but let's do this first. Okay. Okay, let me quickly say the live webcast tomorrow for the National Endowment of the Arts Jazz Masters Awards Ceremony and Concert. It's happening at 7:30 Monday tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. And you can go to arts.gov/Jazz Masters Webcast. And you could also go to jalc.org, NEA Jazz Masters, to catch the webcast as well. And also there, you know, I mentioned, Warren Smith was mentioned earlier, the drummer, Warren Smith. There's a fundraiser presented by Dissident Arts and the Brecht Forum. Drums for Warren, a benefit concert for Warren Smith. Let's help Warren Smith rebuild the priceless percussion collection lost during Hurricane Sandy. You can find out more about it at www.dissidentarts.com. www.dissidentarts.com. And it is Sunday, January 20th, from 2 to 9 p.m. So let's close out listening. Give Jane Cortez the last word, because she will always have the last word. Because she should. She has good words to say. Good last words to leave. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl will be back February 2nd, right before the winter drive. But keep an ear out for MLK Day. That should be interesting. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
And no winter duck, winter salute, winter cover up, winter fight, winter scream, winter dive into your solitude and detoxify whistles in your kidneys, salt-dry curses in your eardrums, and then laugh into the drunken gallbladders of the night. You have to be rich in blood vessels to bury that act in someone's mouth at 3 a.m. every morning, so don't f*** with me. What you say can be held against you, and what you do can be seen as a strike against some patriot act that will strike you down for being patriotic to yourself. All to be the opening act, burn to be the opening act.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.